All right, we are on Facebook finally. Sorry for the delays, everyone out there waiting for us. Chris Graham, Jerry Radcliffe, Scott German, Scott Radcliffe, and we're going to talk day three of our Ultimate ACC tournament. I look a little bright today. I'm on a different computer. We had some technical issues. We're all squared away now, though. And before we get into the Ultimate ACC tournament, though, I want to bring Jerry Radcliffe in to talk some news, UVA sports news, UVA football news in particular. Jerry, you're reporting on jerryradcliffe.com about UVA being a finalist for the nation's number one rated cornerback. Give us that news and give us some of the scoop here.
Yeah, Chris, five-star cornerback Tony Grimes from Princess Anne High School down in the 757, talent-rich 757, Virginia Beach, announced his list of final eight schools yesterday, last night. He had 13, had narrowed his list to 13 prior to that, but Virginia made the cut for the final eight, along with Clemson, Ohio State, Penn State, Georgia, North Carolina, Texas A&M, and Tennessee. He eliminated Alabama, LSU, Virginia Tech, Texas, Maryland, South Carolina, and Oklahoma. He's rated the number seven overall prospect in the country at any position. I mean, Chris, this guy's a hell of an athlete. He's recorded a 4.2 40 and has a 34-inch, I think, vertical leap. He has 41 scholarship offers. This guy's the real deal. It's going to be interesting to see where Virginia fits on this list. He's going to make a final decision on December the 1st, and apparently he's not going to cut his list until then, at least didn't mention it if he was going to.
December 1st, so that's a lot of time.
A lot of time.
For lots of folks to try to sway him. But that's smart, too. December 1st, I mean, you see how the season plays out, et cetera. And this comes up in the context of Scott German. You had raised question about, Virginia obviously losing the last few years, a lot of the top-rated guys from the state to outside forces. I mean, this is at least some step in a good direction, even though he's not committed. Just the fact that Virginia's on the final list, does that make you feel a little better, Scott?
Maybe he was listening.
Oh, he was listening, right? Like, if you think so, hey, you know, yeah. You never know.
Positive karma. But, you know, interesting thing about that list, Jerry, is that those are all football powers except North Carolina and Virginia. But both Carolina and Virginia have, you know, star-studded coaches now, with Carolina bringing back Mac Brown and Bronco certainly getting a lot of national recognition of what he's doing at UVA. You think that's just coincidental?
No, I don't think so. Mac Brown is one of the top recruiters in the country, and he can sell a program like nobody I've ever seen. And Mendenhall, those guys, those recruiters work hard. He has a great reputation. I think the fact that they did play in the Orange Bowl and won the Coastal Division had to make some of these kids at least stop and think a little bit about at least giving them some consideration. And from what Grimes said, he has worked out with some former Virginia football players down in Virginia Beach area and has a lot of respect for them and really likes Nick Howell, Virginia's defensive coordinator, and the way that Virginia has sent and continues to send players to the NFL from the defense. And there's quite a few of them now. And, if you're an 18-year-old kid and there's, you know, if you have a lot of pride in your own state and you see that you can play in the Orange Bowl and go to the NFL and get a great education, you got to at least give some consideration.
Yeah, I think those are all great points. If you're a defender with the way Bronco Mendenhall and his group run their defense, that's got to get your attention. Just like if you're a college basketball player, I remember Kyle Guy was important to him, that he kind of burnished his defensive credentials playing for Tony Bennett in his pack line. When you get that reputation, it definitely starts to help out. For our viewers out there on the live archive, the live version of this, I should say, not the archive, Feel free if you have questions, comments. We've got an all-star panel here, outside of myself anyway. We got Jerry Ratcliffe, Scott Ratcliffe, Scott Jeremy. You got questions about either UVA football news, UVA basketball news. You got comments. We'll be glad to address them. So just feel free to comment right here, and we'll do our best to try to answer your questions or just kind of respond to your comments. So, but as we get started here now, okay, so we got some news out of the way. It feels good. There's still sports news. If we even just have one item a day, that feels positive. We're going to go into our Ultimate ACC Tournament quarterfinals. And for those who are maybe just joining us for the first time on this, what we did was Scott German and I last week, we were kind of talking out loud about an Ultimate ACC Tournament, the best individual season team for each of the 15 ACC member schools. Some of them we allowed, for example, currently in our semifinals, Louisville, Syracuse, FSU, all teams that programs that came into the ACC later on, that we allowed their best season that wasn't even an ACC season, just for the purposes of this tournament. But yeah, the best season individually, and then we wanted to match these teams up. And our panel here gets to debate. We got a rule of three here. We got three. I'm the host moderator. I guess I'm the Tony reality of this group, and I'm throwing it out there to the guys, and they vote. As to who would win, who advances. So we're now in the quarterfinals, and I'll just first go through the matchups, and then we'll play them out. The afternoon session, the 12 o'clock game here on our Thursday in Greensboro, because if it's an Ultimate ACC tournament, it's got to be in Greensboro. North Carolina, the 1981-82 national champs against Wake Forest, number 9 seed, the 1995-96 team that was a number 1 seed in the NCAA tournament, lost in the, I believe it was the Sweet 16 that year. But Tim Duncan was a star of that team. Great team. Just fell short in the tournament, the big tournament. And then the other afternoon game would be the 1983 national champion NC State against the 2003 national champion, the 5 seed Syracuse. Our night session then would be the 2019 national champion Virginia team against the 7 seed Florida State, the 1972 national runners-up. And then our late game would be the 1992 Duke national champion. They're the 3 seed in our tournament. And the 1986 national champion, number 6 seed in this tournament, Louisville. So we have ourselves 6 national champs, a national runner-up, and then Tim Duncan led number 1 seed. It's a pretty good field. Our first game, so I'll start with Jerry Ratcliffe here, and we'll kind of go around, and I'll start with a different guy each time. Jerry, let's start with North Carolina, the 1982 national champions. Some guy named Michael Jordan was a freshman on this team. Look, he had some promise. And the number 9 seed Wake Forest with Tim Duncan. Who do you got here, Jerry?
I don't think it's any contest, even though Tim Duncan was a great player and that was a really good Wake Forest team. But when Tim Duncan has to essentially take on Sam Perkins, James Worthy, and Michael Jordan by himself – I don't think you're going to have it could be a good game because a lot of NCAA tournament games, no matter what the talent is on either team, ends up down to the last couple of minutes. But I covered that North Carolina team both when I got here and before I got here. So Jordan wasn't on the one before I got here, obviously, but that was just one of the most hellacious basketball teams I've ever seen. And I mean, when you consider you got 3 guys like that on the same team, and as Scott pointed out in his synopsis, Michael Jordan was considered the 3rd best player on that team at the time because he was a freshman.
That's crazy.
I mean, just an unbelievable basketball team. And I don't think there's any way in the world that Wake Forest would win that game. So I'm going with the Tar Heels on that one.
And Jerry, the problem you mentioned that that Tim Duncan and this Wake Forest team would have in this matchup, it's Tim Duncan against those 3 guys, probably similar to the problem that Virginia's teams with Ralph Sampson had, well, the Virginia team that year with that Ralph Sampson had with this group. Ralph had talent around him, but not the talent that Carolina had in its accumulation that year.
I remember Terry Holland used to complain about how other teams would just essentially build a wall around Ralph and try to keep from letting him get the ball. And if he did get the ball, they'd collapse on him and didn't give him much room to operate. So if Ralph hadn't had to play against zones and collapsing defenses, Lord knows how many points a game he would have scored. But, yeah, same thing. Duncan experienced some of the same things. So that's a lot. As Tony Bennett says, never let a good big man beat you. And there's ways to negate that. And I'm sure Carolina would have negated that without a lot of problems.
I was getting ready to say, imagine what those Ralph teams would have been like with a three-point line. But there was the experimental three-point line in senior year. But spreading those defenses out, making, you know, if a three-point shot can take away from that. Imagine now, the way we shoot threes now, imagine Ralph Sampson in that environment where you have a much more open lane. Either that or you punish it with open threes. Either way, that'd be great.
And Chris, all of that was Dean Smith's idea, really. I think it was his way of trying to I don't know. I'm still confused about what Dean Smith was trying to do. But, of course, because, you know, they had the 47-45 slowdown in the ACC championship game against Ralph, where both teams, two of the best teams we'll ever see, just didn't really play basketball. But as a result of that game, we got the three-point line and the shot clock. So it would have been interesting if Ralph had had that benefit the whole time.
And Dean, I remember Dean got his wish with the shot clock when it first came in too. That didn't it stop with 4 minutes to go, so he could still run his four corners?
I believe so.
I remember that. Yeah. So Dean still was pulling some levers there for us in the ACC. So we got one vote for the Carolina team. Scott German, you're next. What you got here in this game?
I agree with Jerry. There's no way that Wake could have matched. You know, Tim Duncan had some good supportive staff around him, but he didn't have all Americans that went on to play, that went on to have good NBA careers. It might have been close for a little bit, but Carolina would have warmed down and advanced on. You know, we commented that Jordan was only the third best player on that team. I was reading an article in my research for this is, why was Jordan only the third best player on that team? Because Dean Smith told him to be the third best player on the team. Michael Jordan was as great a player, even as a freshman, he could have led the team in scoring. But like the old saying goes, the only person that held Michael under 20 points was Dean Smith. He was just part of that offense there. I'm sure Jordan probably could have averaged 30 points a game as a freshman. Don't you agree, Jerry?
Probably so, Scott. I mean, he still hadn't come into his own, but he was an incredible player. And I know that Dick Vitale, my good friend, he voted Jordan National Player of the Year that year. So he was making a lot of noise on the national scene. And I wrote a column about that because Dickie was doing a Virginia Carolina game in Charlottesville, and he got in late the night before the game, flew into Charlottesville, and graciously called me from his hotel room late at night. I was able to squeeze a column in why he thought Jordan was better than Sampson, and the next day he got roundly booed at University Hall, and he's never let me forget that since. He says, what a friend you are. You set me up, and I get booed all night at U Hall.
So, Scott Ratcliffe, we got two votes here for the Carolina team in this matchup. Do you make it unanimous or a split decision?
Got to go with the heels on this one. You know, I was actually, when I was looking at the stats from that team, the player stats, it was pretty interesting to see that they really only had five guys that were contributors of their five starters. They all five of their starters average at least 30 minutes a game. And only one guy off the bench averaged 10 or more minutes a game. And another interesting fact about that team is that they all shot over 50% from the field that season, which is, you don't really see that too often.
You really don't. And that shows effective field goal percentage. That's pretty good. And also says, though, the talent level of those guys, Perkins, Worthy, Jordan. You know, Perkins and Worthy, that's when you still played in the post. That's when guys actually still played with their back to the basket a lot. And those two guys were so good at that. Jordan was a jump shooter. I mean, he, you know, at that stage, he was still a guard. So without the 3-point line, see, now we look at effective field goal percentage. It includes threes. They count, you know, 3 points instead of two and that kind of thing. And you factor that in. He had to shoot over 50% without the three. And that says a lot about what he was able to do as a freshman, especially.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he obviously was a gifted player. And it still boggles my mind that he, what was it, his sophomore year of high school, he didn't even make his varsity team, something like that.
2 years before this year. That was like exactly two seasons before this season. Right, right.
It's hard to fathom.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So we got a unanimous decision there. So we'll advance Carolina to the semifinals on a Friday night in Greensboro. That means the place will be Carolina Blue already, guaranteed. Who will they play in the semifinal round? We got number 4 NC State, the 1983 national champs, number 5 Syracuse, the 2003 national champs. Let's start Scott German. We got that state team, the Cardiac Pack. We've got Carmelo Anthony and crew Syracuse. What you got here?
I think this might be the toughest matchup to decide, because the state team just went on a run. That wasn't Jerry, I think, feels that the 74 national championship team with David Thompson was state's best team, but state went on a run in the ACC tournament all the way through to the national title game. Syracuse, Carmelo Anthony, I'm going to just say that I believe that Anthony would be too much to handle, and that I'm going to give the nod to Syracuse in this.
Syracuse, interesting choice there. But yeah, I mean, Carmelo Anthony, a tough load for anybody to cover at the college level. So Scott Ratcliffe, what you got here in this matchup, NC State, Syracuse?
I'm going with Scott, actually, and going with the upset. The Orange, just got to look at their body of work, I think, in this one. Like you said, it was an extremely tough matchup to pick. Two wonderful teams, but, you know, like you said, they kind of went on a run to get there at the end, the Wolfpack. So the Orange, from beginning to end, I guess, if you just look at the overall body of work, that's why I'm going with Syracuse.
Two for Syracuse. Jerry Ratcliffe, what do you have between these two teams?
I'm going to go against the grain on this one, and I'm going to go with the Wolfpack, even though I don't think it was NC State's best team, as Scott pointed out. I went with David Thompson and those guys back in 74, but who beat Bill Walton and his UCLA gang in the semifinals of that Final Four. But, this NC State team was interesting because they had injuries. I guess it was Wittenberg that got hurt early in the season against in the first meeting with Virginia, I believe. And once he came back late in the season, they were a little bit of a different team. They had such great balance. They had inside guys like Lorenzo Charles and of course they had great shooters in Wittenberg and Sidney Lowe. And that's when Val Vanna really came up with the fouling philosophy. I don't know if it was that year exactly, but he really used it to his advantage that year.
I think it was that year, Jerry, and it turned – I mean, that was when the 1-1 was there was no 10 two-shot foul after 10. It was 1-1 the whole way. Really took advantage of that year.
Yeah, he really did, and they won a lot of games that way. And, you know, once Wittenberg came back and they upset Ralph and Virginia in Atlanta in the ACC championship game, which even they couldn't hardly believe, because I remember I don't know if it was Sidney Lowe or Wittenberg, one calling, we had to face the monster, Ralph, because he had dominated them in every other game. But they really got hot toward the end of the regular season in the tournament, and they went on a run like Virginia last year in the NCAAs. They kept pulling out just magical wins one after the other after the other. And that Houston team they beat in the championship was an incredible basketball team with Clyde Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon. I know it was a kind of a weird ending with the shot coming up short and Charles dunking it, but I think they would be able to find a way to maybe not totally shut down Carmelo, but I think they would have been able to negate him, and I think they would have won that game.
Hey Jerry, that championship, that tournament in Atlanta, that was the year that Virginia defeated Duke in the first round, 109-66, and that over time, the urban legend grew that Ralph played all 42 minutes of a 40-minute game by Krzyzewski, if you remember that.
Yes.
And the stats proved that Ralph played about 16. The actual box score, I think Ralph played 16 minutes. Virginia won 109-66, then I think they beat Georgia Tech or Clemson in the semifinals by about 35 or so. So their first two games in the ACC tournament, they'd won by 39 points and 35 points, and State beats them in the ACC final. So that, you know, that probably was one of the biggest upsets in the ACC championship game, tournament championship game.
Yeah, I thought Virginia was, of all the Virginia teams from that era, I thought that was the best one. I thought they were the best team in the country. They had played Houston during the regular season in Japan. I went to Japan for the Suntory Classic, and Ralph didn't play. It was it came after the Samson Ewing showdown in D.C., and Ralph got sick. There was a blizzard that night in D.C. Ralph got sick. He made the trip to Japan, but he did not play. And Virginia beat that Houston team without Ralph, which was remarkable. And then, of course, lost to Chaminade when Ralph was feeling really bad. But yet another one of the greatest upsets of all time. But that was just an unbelievable season. And I mean, there was some really big boy basketball being played in that era. I mean, you look at the players from some of those teams we were talking about, like Carolina and Duke and Virginia and that Houston team. In Japan, I was fortunate to be the only writer from the United States to be covering that game. I was covering it not only for my organization, but also for the Houston Post, because they didn't send anyone over there. And I was doing some correspondent work for Sports Illustrated on that tournament. And because I was covering Houston for the Houston Post, I would go to Virginia's practices and to Houston's practices. And sometimes I would have to ride back and forth to practice with the Houston team. And it was interesting. I had breakfast with Drexler and some guys every day. Just an incredible experience. I remember one of the most interesting things I thought from that experience was we were riding through downtown Tokyo on the Houston bus, and Drexler and some of the other guys were we were talking about how all that. So just think back in back in the day, back in the 40s, all this that we're riding through, the streets we're riding through now, and all the buildings were turned to ashes. And Olajuwon looked bewildered, and he said, why was that? And he said, well, it was firebombed in World War II. And Olajuwon said, what's World War II? Coming from Africa, he had no idea about any of that. And it just goes to show how amazing things are sometimes. But anyway, I ran it enough. I would have picked that NC State team. And
no, I like that story. That's a fascinating story there. And to go back, just if I voted on this game, I would probably, Jerry, actually vote with you. I look at the matchup. Syracuse, of course, plays the 2-3 zone, and that's what Jim Boeheim's signature is. I think State with Lowe and Wittenberg, and also Terry Gannon. Don't forget Terry Gannon. Back then, I mean, that 17-foot, 8-inch 3-point line in the ECC that year, that experimental 3-point line, he went crazy with that 3-point line. And today, if there was, you know, the 3-point line in place, those three guys shooting against that zone, plus Lorenzo, Charles, Thurl, Bailey, I would actually like them too. But I don't have a vote in this, and so we're going to advance Syracuse in this matchup. So Syracuse will face North Carolina, and that thus, from a ticket standpoint, you know, there won't be that one section of red. There'll just be one section of Syracuse orange.
Jim Boeheim doesn't like Greensboro now. He wouldn't have liked it back then either.
He would have liked it even less as possible back then. And he wouldn't like it tomorrow night for his matchup with Michael Jordan either. So now we'll go to our night session games, and we'll start with Scott Ratcliffe on this one. The 2019 national champion Virginia team that a year and a day ago won its first national title, and the 1972 national runner-up FSU team. So, Scott Ratcliffe, you get the first vote.
Having seen pretty much every game last year, I can speak firsthand, at least on the Cavaliers. You know, as you guys were saying last week, that, you know, if you look at the KenPom numbers from over the years, that, you know, this was statistically one of the best teams in that during that span, I guess the past right around 20 years. You know, obviously an outstanding defense, but the offense, as you said, Chris, last week, I mean, it was, as much as it was knocked for not being able to put up points, you know, they were extremely efficient, obviously, with Guy, Jerome, and Hunter and the rest of the crew. So obviously with the 72 team, it was quite an accomplishment to, you know, pull off what they did and give UCLA a game, but got to go with the Cavaliers here.
So one vote Virginia. Let's go to the elder Ratcliffe, Jerry, UVA 2019, 1972 FSU. Your thoughts, who wins this game?
Yeah, I think I would side with Junior there. I think Virginia would have found a way to win that game. They were just on such an unbelievable streak. Really great basketball team, losing three games all year in a pretty good league. I just don't think Florida State would have been able to handle Virginia's balance in that game. And so I'll vote for the Cavaliers in that one too.
So we've got two votes for UVA in this one. Scott German, are you going to surprise me and make it a 2-1 decision, or are you going to go and keep this unanimous?
Well, I'm going to keep you in suspense for a couple of minutes. Okay. I'll tell you that I spent way too much time thinking about this from way too many different angles. The angle I thought, well, okay, were they playing with a 3-point line? Were they playing with the shot clock? Because UCLA, the Florida State 71-72 team, obviously did not play with the shot clock or 3-point line. Basketball, you know, would it have changed the way the outcome depending upon what the rules were? Again, way too much time thinking about that.
Scott, let's presume, of course, that there is a 3-point line, there is a shot clock. Also, the kids have to go to class, which may make that the NC State team we just eliminated may make things harder for them. But they do have to go to class. They do have to at least have some pretense towards a degree. So there you go. We got the ground rules established now. I thought those were set, but yeah. So 3-point line, shot clock, 5 fouls, just like usual. And the kids have to actually pretend like they're going to class.
Based on that, I would advance Virginia. Okay. Just on that, and knowing that Tony would have figured, you know, that Florida State team had 4 players in double figures. They had a 5th player that averaged 9.8. So they were a deep team, but we know what Virginia, the 2018-2019 UVA team faced some quality competition, you know, Duke, Carolina, and some really good talent, really good teams in the NCAA tournament. So knowing how good a coach Tony is, and I think he could have figured out how to offset some of that scoring that you, that Florida State had. So I'm going to make it unanimous and say that Virginia would have figured out a way to slow down that Florida State team and win that game.
I'm going to say this. I've watched, because there's no sports to watch, I've watched the some of those UVA games from last year's tournament run a couple times this last 3 or 4 weeks. And one thing that stood out, I mean, because I guess as we're covering it last year, you know, you're still focused on the game. You're focused on the big three and everything else. One thing that I saw the second time watching it through, it's kind of like when you watch a movie multiple times, you start seeing different things. It really stood out to me how good Mamani Diakite was last year during that tournament run. You know, for a guy whose season numbers were 7.4 points, 4.4 rebounds, man, oh, man, he was good in that tournament. We all covered those games. You know, I mean, I even know that I wrote about it. I wrote about his numbers, you know, improving during the tournament run. But seeing it, I mean, you know, what he was doing protecting the rim, what he was doing, you know, scoring in the paint. We didn't see the Diakite we saw this year hitting the threes consistently. I mean, he hit upper 30% this year from three-point range. But he's so good around the rim on offense, rebounding, defense, everything else. He was really good last year. I mean, so I'm going to throw that out there. You know, just the appreciation for Mamani. Of course, again, this year we saw it and he was the leader of this team. But during that tournament run last year, there's no way this team goes as far as it does if Diakite doesn't play the way he did.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally agree.
Virginia had, everyone thought it was a big three, but in that tournament, it was really the big four, don't you think? With, you have to add Diakite in there.
And he earned a starting role by the end of the, the dance. So that speaks volumes in itself. I don't think he started too much overall throughout the course of the season, if I remember right. But
yeah, he wasn't. And I'll say this. I think, Jerry, you might have been the one who wrote this story. I know the story ends up in the book, which we should be promoting more. We're a year and a day out from the tournament championship. In fact, my wife, Crystal Graham, tells me today it showed up on her Facebook time hop. That she had posted something the morning we're still in Minneapolis, and she says, "Hey, maybe this should be a book." And of course, Jerry and I had already been in contact about that, even leading up to the championship game. But she threw three possible names out, and Team of Destiny, of course, was one of them. So, Team of Destiny, you can go to Amazon, look that up. You can, of course, go to either jerryratcliffe.com, augustafreepress.com. The links will take you to buying the book. But the story ends up in the book about how Mamani, after his what he felt was a poor performance, and actually it was, but he conceded it was a poor performance in the ACC tournament against Florida State, that he talked with Coach Bennett and sort of, you know, almost apologized, I guess, for how poorly he played and promised that he would play better in the tournament. And Jerry, I think it was you that actually wrote about how that was a turning point for him and maybe was the cause of the renewed effort that he had in the NCAA tournament.
It truly was, Chris, and I talked to him at length about that, and he felt really bad that he had played so poorly against Florida State, and they were really – I never got the sense that Virginia was going to win that game because they just couldn't handle Florida State's length, and it was almost like Mamani cowered a little bit against those physical, bigger Florida State players, and – I think he had a come to Jesus meeting with himself and probably with Tom Perrin, the noted sports psychologist who had been working with Mamani and Jay Huff all year to help build their confidence and help them handle all the pressures of suddenly being thrust into larger roles. And he did. He had a meeting with Tony. I don't know if it was in Charlotte or if they, or after they got back home to Charlottesville, but he did. He apologized to Coach Bennett about the way he played and did say that he would play better. And Tony challenged him to play better too. And he essentially played his way into a starting role and a starring role through the tournament and posted, I guess, more than double his average throughout the postseason. And, you know, he played so well that they had to play him instead of Jack Salt in most instances. And because he was just so more effective. But yeah, he was a big difference.
He really was. It kind of reminds you that sometimes, you know, as much as you don't like as a fan or observer of a team, that your team has to go through some adversity sometimes because they went through that adversity, because he went through that adversity, I should say, he became better for it. I had the numbers here, I thought, at one point in a story, and I was trying to look them up. He averaged so during the season last year, 7.4 points, 4.4 rebounds, as I mentioned. During the tournament, 10.5 points, 8.2 rebounds, 2.7 blocks per game. He really stepped up, and then of course that leads him. He bridged well from that to this year being the leading scorer on the team. So, you know, just great to see his growth, and because of a very mature moment on his part to acknowledge that he hadn't played well. So we'll advance Virginia, and who will the Hoos face in the second game of our semifinals on Friday night? Will it be number 3 Duke, the 1992 national champs? Will it be the number 6 seed Louisville, the 1986 national champs? And Jerry Ratcliffe, I want to start with you on this one. Duke and Louisville, who do you have in this one?
Well, we had Louisville knocking out a previous Duke team in the previous round. So I'm picking Duke to get revenge in this round. That 91-92 Duke team, I still think this might be Duke's best team ever. Some incredible players on that team. Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill, Thomas Hill, Christian Leitner. They had won the national championship the year before, and the only guy that didn't come back was Greg Kubek. Who was a pretty good player, but, you know, when you have that kind of talent coming back from a national championship team, it's hard to stop. And they became the first team since UCLA in 73 to repeat as national champions. I just think that was just an incredible Duke team. And I think Duke beats Never Nervous Purvis. I think they might have made Purvis nervous in this game, so I'm going with the Blue Devils.
One time nervous Purvis after meeting this Duke team. No, I don't disagree there. The loaded Duke team, definitely. Scott German, you're next. Who do you have in this Duke Louisville matchup?
Begrudgingly, I'm going to have to advance Duke.
I can hear your voice too.
Yeah, because I can see the way this tournament is unfolding, and it's not going to be pretty. I agree with Jerry. They just had too much. Now, you take aside the Hail Mary pass to Leitner, the turnaround jumper at the buzzer. Had that not gone down, Duke, that team would have lost to Kentucky, right? And we wouldn't be having these conversations. But it didn't. He made the shot. But that they had a lot of talent on that team. Those were all ACC tournament players that Jerry – all ACC players that Jerry just mentioned. Hurley, both Hills. I'm thinking they were both like first, second team players. Is that right, Jerry? Both.
That sounds right.
Seems right. Yeah. Yeah.
That team was maybe one of the best teams we'll find out in the history of the ACC. And I think they would have just been too much for one. You know, Louisville had some good players, but they were led by Ellison. I think Duke would have wore them down and won that game.
So, Scott Ratcliffe, do you make it unanimous, Duke Louisville here?
Definitely. Growing up, I kind of pulled for the early Duke teams before they became what they became, I guess. So I was actually a big fan of Hurley and Leitner and Grant Hill. Really idolized them. I was probably in middle school or maybe high school at that point. But yeah, you know, very memorable team. I did see the Louisville Duke championship game in 86, I believe it was. And that was an impressive Louisville team, but that Duke team was just incredibly loaded with talent. And obviously Coach K, I think, would prevail in the coaching matchup in that aspect too. So I'll go with Duke.
I'd say the only reason this Duke team is the best Duke team of all time is because they were a year older than the Duke team that won the championship the year before. that beat UNLV in the semifinals, undefeated at the time, UNLV in the semifinals, because the same team, again, just a year older. I mean, these guys were a year older, a year better. But, well, you know, classic Christian Laettner, one of the all-time greats in college basketball. Bobby Hurley, one of the all-time greats at point guard in college basketball history. And then Grant Hill. We talked about Michael Jordan being the third best player on that Carolina team. Grant Hill being the, probably the third best player on this team says a lot about the depth of this particular Duke team. And that overlooks, you know, the other guys, the role players like Thomas Hill and others that we've mentioned. So, yeah, this is you know, for Coach K, and he's had so many great teams. And I know Scott had a hard time debating all those great Duke teams and changed at least once what he thought the team should be in this slot. This is the best of a lot of really good Duke teams. So that sets up a fun Friday for us on our Ultimate ACC tournament as we get ready for semifinals. And not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but we've got number one North Carolina, the 82 champs, against the 2003 national champ Syracuse team. So that's a fun one. And then we've got a Virginia Duke one that, you know, I'm kind of glad I'm not voting in this one, because that's not easy. I mean, that's the great all-time classic Duke team, the best Virginia team we've ever seen, that as Scott reminded, you know, I've pointed out in the Ken Pom era, there's two teams in the KenPom.com era, which dates to 2001-2002, that have finished in the top three, both offense and defense efficiency. The other was the 2008 Kansas national champs. So in terms of the last 20 years, that Virginia team is one of the two best teams in the last 20 years to win a national championship. And yet they've got to beat this all-time great Duke team to get to the final. So, I don't envy your jobs. I can tell that the research is being done. You guys have notes that you're looking at and everything else. This will keep you busy trying to figure out who wins this one. The other one is going to be tough too, but the Duke-Virginia matchup that we're going to be talking about tomorrow, that is not an easy one to figure out.
Hey, Jerry, I'm going back to something Scott said a little bit ago about as a youngster, how he grew up liking Duke. And that tells me you were really spending far too much time on the road.
You know, it's funny. Back in those days when newspapers had money to spend on coverage and stuff, David Teal and I, and one of his colleagues, Dave Fairbanks, and sometimes Kevin Record or somebody, one of my cohorts, we would go down to, and we covered a lot of games, not only Virginia games back then, but we covered a lot of Duke games and a lot of Carolina games because, you know, all those schools had such incredible basketball programs. And if you were an ACC fan, even if you didn't like those other schools, you wanted to know what they were doing. And so it was not unusual if Virginia wasn't playing for Teal and I and Fairbanks to go down. And there was a little cheap hotel, which was easy on our budgets. It's called the Duke Carolina Inn. I don't think it's still around, but it was a little dumpy motel somewhere around between Chapel Hill and Durham, I think. And we'd go down and cover a Duke game or a Carolina game and stay at that place and come back the next day. But I think the fact that Duke was so good during that time, a lot of kids around Scott's age, you know, like the Ralph teams, this Duke team was kind of like the Beatles. Everywhere they went, they drew hordes of fans and curiosity seekers and things like that. And, you know, all their games were on TV. Of course, Vitale was pushing the Blue Devils pretty hard. I think a lot of kids his age were big Duke fans. And I can understand that. But I thought, you know, that stretch from the early 80s to the early 90s, mid 90s was the golden age of ACC basketball because a lot of players stuck around for 4 years. And you were seeing big boy basketball every night for the most part. And even some of the lower ranked teams in the ACC, still had pretty good rosters because they kept guys around for 4 years. So I just thought that was great basketball back then.
I have to ask Scott Radcliffe. So, Scott, when was the epiphany that Duke was evil? When did that actually hit? When did you finally come into that realm of realization?
That's a good question. Because along the same lines, you know, my mom and I, we went down to, you know, Greensboro a lot of the time, or Charlotte sometimes for the ACC tournament. A lot of those years, Virginia would lose their first game. So we were there for the weekend and I got to root for somebody, I guess, you know. And like I said, you know, that was the time when Dean Smith and Carolina were what Duke is now, pretty much. And Duke was kind of the up-and-coming, you know, powerhouse with, you know, just the maybe a little more unknown, obviously, than they are now. I mean, obviously, they're one of the perennial powerhouses now. But yeah, it was. I would, to answer your question, though, I would say probably more like the late 90s. Like, because I remember liking the I went to school in Charlotte. And that 98, I believe it was 90, it was either 98 or 99, because those are the 2 years I was down there. But we went and they actually played one of their NCAA tournament games in Charlotte. And a friend of mine and I went just to watch, you know, all the games that day. And I remember that, I want to say they had like William Avery and Shane Battier and Elton Brand maybe.
Yeah.
Around that time. And a little bit after that, I think, is when I really started, it kind of faded. Just because it kind of became what Carolina used to be, you know, getting all the calls and being so hated by everyone who wasn't a Carolina fan, pretty much.
I had wondered if the turning point might have been, I think it was a 96 game in U-Haul where the clock issue and Wojo gets fouled and he gets the free throws and they win the game and Norman Nolan refuses to shake Coach K's hand and said that was BS, Coach. And see, that could have been – I use that example because I thought – growing up, I was – for whatever reason with the NFL teams, I was a Houston Oilers fan. I have aunt and uncle from Houston. I had an Oilers helmet that I took to show and tell in second grade, Earl Campbell jersey. They were playing your Steelers all the time back then and never could get through. But I was an Oilers fan. And then the Oilers were playing, but I always thought, okay, I'll root for the Oilers. They're in the AFC. I'll also kind of just root for the Redskins because they're the rivals of the Cowboys, and also people around here like the Redskins. So I'll kind of root for them too. So then in '91, I believe it was, Houston played the Oilers played the Redskins. The Redskins, it was the year they ended up winning the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl, but they were undefeated, like 10-0. The Oilers were 9-1, and so all of a sudden I got to make a choice. I can't root for both, and I root for the Oilers. And that was the point I realized I'm really not a Redskins guy. So sometimes that makes you have a moment like that where you say, I can't have double allegiances anymore. When they play each other, I root for one. That means I like them more. So that Duke game I've written about, we wrote about in our Mad About You book, Patrick Hite and I, we did a whole chapter on that game. We tracked down Willie Dersh. Jeff Jones was, we talked to him in 2006. He'd been fired 8 or 9 years before that. He was still cursing mad about that game, which I love to find that emotion in a guy. That's one that sticks out to me, is one that a person who maybe thinks they like Duke and they know they like Virginia, that could have been the kind of game where you say, I can't stand this anymore. I got to choose one allegiance here.
Hey, Chris, can you ask me that same question?
Oh, okay. So Scott German now. So I've asked Scott Radcliffe. Hey, Scott German, when did you come to the realization that Duke was evil?
Can I lump in Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia Tech?
Was the epiphany all at once for all
three? Yeah, okay. Pretty much. And it was about the moment the delivery doctor slapped me on the backside that started me breathing.
You got it right then. That's pretty good. Yeah. You know, I'll be honest, as growing up, you know, certainly Virginia and ACC, and Tech was not in the ACC until 2004. I didn't even care about Tech as a UVA guy. You know, I remember Mincer's, our good friends, Jerry, one of your great sponsors. The T-shirt that I remember seeing hanging up there when I was a student on grounds in the early 90s, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good was the picture of the Cavalier mascot. The bad was the Duke mascot and the Ugly was the Carolina mascot. Tech wasn't even in the equation. They were just the little step cousins from down Southwest Virginia way. And so I didn't have the healthy hatred for Tech that came along later in life, I guess. But certainly,
hey, Chris, in basketball, they still pretty much are.
Well, actually, I mean, the UVA
Tech, I mean.
But in football, they are too, right? I mean,
yep. Becoming that way.
The 15-game winning streak that ended this past year, notwithstanding, if that's your sport, you better do better in it than they do. But, you know, if you're gonna leave a spot in your trophy case for a national championship, it'd be nice to put one in there. So I'm sure we're making Jerry really uncomfortable. Jerry is like, of the four of us here, he's the objective sports writer. The three of us wear our hearts on our sleeves, and Jerry's just like, please, please, can I put something in front of my face? But
one of the few things I'm passionate about is the 49ers. So other than that, you probably won't get too much out of me.
So who are the 49ers? So Scott Radcliffe is Steelers, and we know your rivals. You've got lots of them. The Ravens, I'm sure the Browns to a degree, even though that's a rivalry of a hammer and nail. For the Niners, who's the rival there that gets you riled up?
Let me jump in real quick. I can predict this one.
Okay.
I can predict who Hootie thinks is his least favorite, and I'm going to say the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to say the Rams.
It's the Seahawks. No. The Rams were yesteryear, but there's a real bitterness between the 49ers and the Seahawks, and it's a lot of that came around because of Pete Carroll and what a jerk that guy is. I don't know. It's just there's always been a nastiness between those two teams since Seattle got good. And back in the old days, when 49ers were winning Super Bowls, it was the Cowboys and the Packers, but now it's pretty much the Seahawks and the Rams a little bit.
Interesting. We've got some fighting words out of Jerry Radcliffe. I like hearing this. This is a good show. So tomorrow for our viewers out there, both on the live and on the archive, and then listeners on the podcast, we're going to go through our Friday semifinals, and we're going to go ahead and do the championship game as well, kind of wrap it up the week with the last three games of our ultimate ACC tournament. And again, I do not envy you guys having to pick that Duke UVA game in particular. I'm not saying the other game's easy. It may be easier. It seems to me easier maybe to pick the Carolina Syracuse game. That Duke UVA game tomorrow night, there are going to be some hairs coming out on that one. So thank you for taking that one on. And I should say, any last thoughts, Jerry? I'll go around the panel here. Any last thoughts as we're wrapping up our show today?
It's been fun just talking about all these games. I'm sure those people watching, it stirs a lot of memories for them as well. When you've been around the game as long as I have, and you guys too, it's great to reminisce and think about some of the incredible things you've covered or seen throughout the years. And thanks for doing this. This has been really cool.
Scott German, last thoughts on today's show.
Well, this has been fun. And I think that when we get through this mess that we're in, we're going to look back and hopefully think about what we did here to pass time and maybe make this a little more bearable. So in the Tom Hanks movie about Mr. Rogers, Mr. Rogers said that in time of crisis, you look for the helpers. And maybe after this is all over with, we would have been considered by some as the helpers to get people through this difficult time and give them something to look at or read and just get their mind off of what's actually happening out in the real world.
Nice positive message. And Scott Radcliffe, last thoughts on today's show?
Yeah. Just piggybacking off of what Scott just said, you know, that's what we were going for with our Wahoo Madness thing too. And we're coming along that we're down to the final eight there. And UVA fans, if you want to vote, you've got till Sunday at midnight to vote for essentially your Mount Rushmore of UVA basketball. And, you know, I've also had a great time participating in this, and it's been a lot of fun. And And I appreciate you guys having me on.
We'll start tomorrow's show talking the Wahoo Madness. Let's start with that. We'll go more in depth on that. So Scott and Jerry lead us through that. Now, Scott, that's been a real project for you. Scott Reichel, that's been a real project for you in particular. So we'll start there tomorrow. And then tomorrow again, we're going to finish up our Ultimate ACC Tournament. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and have a great day, everybody.